You're listening to Strictly Business Podcast with Lindsay Williams.
The JSE has almost closed its doors for another day, so it's time for the 5 o'clock shadow. And normally I would speak to David Shapiro from Sasfin Securities and Nick Kunze from Sanlam Private Wealth, but Nick is away on other business. So it's just David, so I can really get into that fertile mind of his. And David, I have to say something. You love the tech sector, so you must have been absolutely delighted and jumping through hoops this week because of Alphabet, Facebook and Apple.
I think they've all astonished us with the numbers. And I think it points to where the global economy is going, or the shape of the global economy, how people are changing their tastes. You know, if you look at Apple, I mean, it's an astonishing number that came out there. And I had no idea that people would buy as many new iPhone 12s and everything that's associated with it, the watch, the pods, and also the subscription, because we're going into a subscription type economy where people are putting out money monthly, you know, whether to get to buy services from Apple, to buy streaming services, to buy any kind of service. So I think they point to there's a lot we can learn from these results. Lindsay, I must say, I never get carried away with whether they beat estimates or they didn't beat estimates, or they're trading at this kind of multiple and they're too expensive. I always look at the underlying business to see whether they, you know, adding more people, whether they building up on the top line. And they all did that. You know, each company achieved an astonishing amount of revenue and of profit. So I think that, you know, whether the market decides to put them at 1% or sell them down 1% doesn't really matter to my, you know, to me. It's where they're going and what they represent that I think is very important.
I've asked this question of you on a few occasions, and I'll have to ask it again, because is it because of the lockdown and people sitting there and thinking, right, I've got to use my phone a little bit more, I need a new phone, and therefore the companies like Samsung, who also came out with their numbers this week, and Apple do extremely well, and then everyone will say, well, I've got this new phone now, so I'm not going to buy anything for another year and a half or 2 years. Is it that, or is it just an ongoing momentum?
I think it's a mixture. I think it's both. And I think the upward momentum has been triggered or fast-tracked by a lockdown. You know, we learn to use technology better, and we're not going to give it up. So if we're buying, I looked at Shopify's results, which is Apple's number two. I think it's far down from Apple, but still an up-and-coming company that's Canadian-based. They've got a slightly different model. They're much more liberal in the way that they sell products, and they open up their platform, you know, to people who want to sell products. And their results were outstanding. And you just see how we're moving towards buying online. And I think even if we do get this opening up economy and we like to go back to shops and that, I still think it's going to represent a big change in the way that we do things. And you know, you can look at that from all the different companies. So I think it reinforces where tech is going. I know that there's this big talk about go for value and go for the cyclicals. You know, as we come out of lockdown, people are going to go back to doing this and that. Yeah, that's true, but I think that will be temporary. I still think that this is leading the way, and I wouldn't give up my place in tech shares at this stage.
I think that there is an inflection point at the moment in this whole tech business, and also the food delivery business. I've got two stories for you now. Okay, the first story is I was seeing a French chap was being interviewed, and he has a food delivery service, but high end, you know, not Burger King or KFC or McDonald's or anything. It's the you know, the Michelin starred restaurants in France, and he says. He says that some of the restaurants don't want to reopen. They don't want to reopen and have customers in there annoying them and you know, having to, you know, fawn upon them and pour the glass of wine for them. They are now genuinely considering closing down and just having a kitchen, which is so much cheaper, and having it delivered, but obviously in a very sophisticated way if it's a five-star meal. That's the first thing, which I found very, very interesting. And they were serious about it. You know, the French love their food and going out and talking and yakking away. The other thing that was interesting to me was I have a German friend, and she's a very highly placed financial person at a multinational conglomerate, which has its headquarters in America, but has branches all over the world. Okay. Now, she said, I'm never going back to the office unless I have to. I would get to work at 8 o'clock in the morning and leave at 4 o'clock in the afternoon. There's the commute and everything, which we all know. He said, most of my day was spent talking to people at the coffee machine or the water cooler about their children, about their holidays and showing me photos and that sort of thing. Since I've been at home, working at home, sometimes I work for 20 minutes a day. And this is a senior person at a major, major company. Mostly, she says, though, it's around about 2 hours a day, and I do have to be on standby for emails. But I thought to myself, you obviously can't do that in your sort of business. I mean, you could stay at home, but you've got to keep your eye on the screen and everything. But there must be a decent percentage of jobs in the world that can be done from home far more efficiently. And she said, I can go for a bicycle ride now. I can do some gardening, whatever it is. Yeah. I thought it was fascinating that she could work for 2 hours a day instead of nine.
I think there's going to be a big learning curve when we do come out of this. I think I found personally that I doubt whether I'm going back to the office. I will go back for meetings, and I'll go back at at certain times where I'll meet people if we need to. Today I went down to Melrose Arch and I had two meetings outside. But I'm doing a lot more than I have ever done before, and also a lot more efficient.
And that's the thing, efficiency.
And reading a lot more. But I think the one thing, I've always said that I miss the talk around the coffee machine and so on. And we do pick up a lot. But, Lindsay, and I've said, I'm getting more from talking to you and to Nick and to other people and to listening to – I went into a Canaccord. Now, I've never dealt with Canaccord in my life before, but they had a webinar in which I was party to. I listened to Tony Dwyer. I listened to their economist. It was a half an hour or 3/4 an hour, and brilliant. You know, I learned a lot. Now, I'd never been able to do this before. So I've gone into various others. You know, we use UBS a lot. I get a huge amount of input from their CIO, from their investment office. And so what I'm finding is that I'm getting a lot more intellectual input than I have ever got before, and with very little cost, and virtually no cost. So a lot of the decisions I make myself, a lot of the decisions I make are very much self-driven, you know, with a little team that in my team, you know, with a bit of discussion there. And that I found fascinating in that. And you know what also comes out as well? We don't realize that you can hook into any company's webcast or what do they call it? Yeah, it is a webcast.
Yes.
So if Facebook's results come out, it doesn't matter whether I'm here or whether I'm in New York or California or China. You know, it's there in front of you. So I've said, hold on, you know, so from that point of view, I'm putting in a lot more time than I have ever, and I'm finishing my mails and so on. So, there's a lot we're going to learn. I'm lonely at times, I must admit, and I miss young people around and the fun that they have, you know, and so on. But I mean, from I can operate, you know, quite easily remotely.
So you're making the decision because you were hankering after getting back to the office, but now you're saying you probably won't go back there apart from going in occasionally and saying, how's it going?
Exactly. I will go in maybe a couple of times a week, but not for long, you know, for an hour or so, maybe for a lunch or something like that. But my operation will be from here. You know, I'm not going to sit around and have – I might have a desk there, but I'm not sure that I will – log on from there. The log on will be from here. So I will kind of measure my day accordingly or plan my day accordingly. So I've learned a lot.
That's very interesting.
I mean, even talking to you, the amount of times that we talk and the amount of other interviews that I can do is just, dramatic.
Mm.
compared with where I would have to get into a car and go to a studio and wait and then, you know,
You can't really have the exchange of views. You can't really have the in-depth exchange of views. I mean, okay, podcasting, I think podcasting is probably suits you better because you like to talk and you've got a lot to say and it's always relevant. But if you're on TV or if you're on radio, they'll tell you, you know, you've got 7 minutes and away you go.
Yeah.
Whereas
yeah.
with you, myself and Nick, we can talk for 20, 30 minutes sometimes if we want to. So,
It's a waste of time to do 5 minutes. Absolute waste of time.
Thank you.
Because you can never get into the meat. I'm not saying that I'm unique or Nick's unique, but I mean, if you want to interview a person, you've got to, you know, you've got to probe, ask questions, get to their philosophy, get to why they're doing what they're doing. And you can't do it with sound bites.
No.
You know, you can't do it in a sound
bite. No, it can't be a headline. It can't be a little tidbit. It can't be something bite-sized, a little bite-sized chunk. You've got to get into it. And that's the, certainly when it's people like you who've got so much experience and knowledge. But anyway, let's have a look at the Stock Exchange News Service.
Yeah.
I was looking at Tongott Hewlett. Share price down 21%. Yeah. What happened there? They came out with a debt restructuring update.
It came out at about 3 o'clock, and everyone's got to go through this, but obviously it's to the detriment of the firm, you know.
Yeah,
they were under a lot of pressure. So I'm not sure how this alters where they were, but of course there's something very negative in this, and it's thrown taken the share price down about 20%. Funny enough, Tongott hasn't done much this year. Last year was last year we saw the big moves in Tongott. When they recovered from a very, very oversold position. But nothing coming out, nothing much coming out. So I have to relook at this one and go through that SENS announcement in a lot more detail. But it's obviously it's pointing to, you know, to some worries. Look, it's Lindsay, I always am weary. I think we were discussing – I'm trying to think who I was discussing this with about – in fact, it was with Julieta on TV last night, about when to sell. And I say that because I was asked a question about a lot of these companies that have been under pressure. And I'm always cautious of companies that have faced troubled times. I know Aspen is picking themselves up and Sasol is picking themselves up. But I'm always cautious of companies that have been, that have had troubles, have been over indebted and so on. And I would rather avoid them than try and pick the bottom and try and make the 10 bagger as they turn around as well. When they're on their feet again and they're the kind of company that's going to grow steadily without having to worry about the debt on their balance sheet, that's fine. You know, I'll go into it. But I'm always cautious of, of companies that have faced troubled times.
Well, if you'd had a look at Sasol a year ago when it was 22 rand a share and you looked at it now at 251 rand a share, although it was higher this morning, you'd say to yourself, well, maybe I should change my policy occasionally for people that are not so risk-averse as I am. Maybe you've got some clients that like some Hail Marys.
Well, if you go through it, there's a lot of fortuitous events that happened. You know, what would have happened if Biden had lost the election? What would have happened if Biden hadn't got into the stimulus program, if he had lost Georgia? So, along the way, there's certain circumstances that have aided Sasol's recovery in terms of the stimulus to the global economy, the pickup in oil price. Those wouldn't have happened without the election. Now, we didn't know that 6 months ago. Not even 3 or 4 months ago. So I'm saying there are a lot of issues that worked in favor, which I can't take those kind of risks with clients' money. I can't say, well, if this happened, then that. So, I mean, if we look at where we are in markets today, things could have been dramatically different if Biden hadn't been able to get up in Congress last night and come out with this $1.8 trillion family planning, whatever it is. I don't know how they term it. But also with his stimulus program and also the checks that he sent out, US economy up 6.4% with consumption up dramatically. That wouldn't have happened. So I think if you look at the market that we're looking at now, whether it was again, the same thing with the vaccine. You know, we didn't know that there was going to be a J&J or Pfizer vaccines in December. So those are the risks that have favored these kind of companies, which have allowed them to, you know, to pick up and do what they've done. So you can't, you know, those are difficult risks to take.
Just briefly, because I know you've got to go off to another interview in 10, 15 minutes' time. I watched, for some reason, I was up. I fell asleep on the sofa, woke up, and there was Biden yakking away.
Yeah.
And it was a very nice sort of combination between so a little bit. He was a little bit Trumpy by saying, you know, we've done this and we've done that and we've created more jobs in the first 100 days than any other president. And growth is going to be at its highest level for four decades and all that sort of stuff, which I thought, OK, you're borrowing it from your predecessor. But also he was very, very firm with what he called autocrats, and he's obviously having a go at Putin and President Xi and President Erdogan from Turkey, and I thought he did that in a very dignified way, and also I quite like the fact that he married the capitalism that the United States is built on with the social care as well. I mean, for children's education and social welfare. I thought it was a lovely speech, personally.
You know what? That point, you don't know how important that is. I think people underestimate that you know, education starts from the time that a kid takes its first steps.
Yes.
And unfortunately, it's very, you know, pre-care, you know, the preschool. Yes, elementary school or primary school is free in many countries and that, but not preschool. And that's a time that the base is created. Now, I say that because we talk about bringing women into the workforce and creating more, you know, what the words are, inequality.
Diversity, now,
Diversity and equality. Now, I've got a daughter and two daughter-in-laws,
okay, right.
And lots of grandchildren. And I know that in Australia, for example, the cost of preschool was just enormous, and there were no tax breaks. Well, there were the tax breaks only allowed my grandchildren to go to daycare for 2 days because it was so expensive. So, you know, my daughter-in-law couldn't work because of that, or was inhibited or restricted from what she could do. You know, so if you can send your kids to daycare, you know, until 3 or 4 o'clock, whatever it is. Yes, of course it frees up women. So I've got three experiences of where the woman in the family, you know, was forced to stay behind. I know that, and take care of the kids and couldn't get into the workforce. So it's absolutely imperative that kids are allowed to, you know, that there is this facility where everybody can leave their kids at daycare or take them to preschool, you know, to get the kind of education, which then gives them the base to catch up with the rich, so-called rich kids. And I welcome that. And it's something that I've always pushed and spoken about.
And I also welcome his tax regime, which is obviously a difficult sort of juggling act. No tax rises for people earning less than $400,000 a year. Apart from that, there'll be some rises. And the 650 billionaires that have earned $4 trillion in the last few months, increased their wealth by $4 trillion, tax them.
Absolutely.
What do they need $4 trillion for? I mean, how many meals can you have a day? How many airplanes can you buy? I mean,
absolutely. No, absolutely. Rubbish. And they feed themselves. You know that we always have a go at some of the bonuses that their people earn and the salaries that they pay themselves and try to justify it whether or not it's you know. I from that point of view, I'm a socialist. I'm a bit of a Bernie Sanders, but I mean, let them pay tax. How much, how much can you eat a day?
That's what I'm saying.
How many pairs of shoes can you put? That's crazy.
It is. It's nonsense. It's just a game, you know. He's got this and I've got that and everything. Elon Musk versus Jeff Bezos and versus, what's his name? The guy from Microsoft, Bill Gates. Anyway, Not a problem I'll ever have. Okay. Dollar rand is 14.30, David. The British pound against the rand is 19.95. The euro rand is 17.33. Euro dollar 121.15. A slightly weaker US dollar again. The cable, which is the pound against the dollar, is 139.55. The gold price is 17.69, which is down $16 an ounce. The platinum price is down, goodness me, in the last 24 hours, down nearly $50 an ounce. Yeah. What's that all about? 11.97. What is that all about?
I don't know whether I'm battling to reconcile it, because the dollar did come under pressure after Jay Powell spoke. And I don't know whether it's gathering a little bit of steam now, because I have seen the 10-year and the, you know, the 30-year pickup there in the United States. So it might have been that we have seen improvement, you know, in the dollar. I see that the rand has given back some of its gains.
Yes.
But you're right, you know, metal prices are under pressure. I would have thought with the kind of growth numbers that we're seeing in the US and the kind of mood that's in the market, that it would have popped up metal prices, you know.
Me too.
Meaning or translating into demand.
I would have thought so too. The US 10-year bond yield, by the way, 166.5. And I noticed that Jerome Powell last night said that inflation would be, if it does emerge, will be transitory. And I felt like saying to him, well, is the wheat price, the corn price, the iron ore price, the cheese price, the milk price, the lumber price, and every other commodity price, are they transitory as well? No, they're baked into the economy. I'm sorry, Mr. Powell, but I think you're being fanciful here.
Well, that's very interesting that you bring that up, because if you look in the US, Ford, all the motor companies are under pressure. Why? Because they can't get chips.
Yeah.
And although that's not necessarily a pricing factor at the moment, I'm sure it will translate into higher prices, it certainly is a supply chain issue, which can, in certain instances, cause prices to pick up. So we've got instances. Ford is down about 9% the last time I saw General Motors. And Ford had really, really good numbers, you know, had very good results. But, I mean, even if it goes through to Europe, we've been talking about, you know, the demand for electric vehicles, where we saw Volkswagen and all those cars. They're all down today. And why? Because of the worry that production might have to ease because they cannot get semiconductors or chips for their, you know, motor vehicle. And that all applies to fridges and to toasters and to all other appliances as well, and medical goods. Philips said the same thing with their numbers. So, you know, relating to what you say, there are going to be issues where prices do pick up.
And these are not just spikes. These are demand and supply led rallies, I think, when it comes to those agricultural commodities that I just mentioned. Things that you put in your shopping basket every single day. West Texas crude, you don't put that in your shopping basket, and you won't be putting it in your car in the next 10 years, because there won't be any petrol-powered cars. But anyway, West Texas is up 1.3% to $64.61, $64.71 per barrel. Brent crude oil, $68.28, which is up 1.5%. Can you tell me where Bitcoin is, please?
No, I don't.
You can't tell me. You're such a Luddite.
I haven't got the code, and I refuse to put it onto my spreadsheet.
In that case, I'm with you on that one. Bring back Nick Kunzo, I say.
Because he follows anything that's going to make him money.
Exactly. He's a very shallow man. 9.28 is the South African 10-year bond yield. And as I said before, the US 10-year is 166.5, just creeping higher. Okay, movements on the JSE today. We've had a look at the Stock Exchange News Service. I'll give you mine. I'll show you mine if you'll show me yours. This whole story about Investec, let's just focus on that, because you put out a tweet. I don't know if it was yesterday or today, the fact that it's up 36% this year, and the index itself, the banking index on the JSE, is only up 4 or 5% or something. So today, another 3.75% up for Investec Limited, 3.33% up for Investec PLC. What is that all about? What is your theory?
You know, what is happening now, and I saw it with NatWest today in the UK, is that they're beginning to reverse their provisions. Okay, in other words, the provisions they made against bad debts or non-performing debts during the pandemic. So, one, you know, I asked the same question you're asking me, and a person who used to work at Investec and has got contacts and probably also following it said that the likelihood is that they'll be able to reverse more of their provisions than anybody else.
So what does that mean? Go from one page to another. I mean, you're an accountant, so you say instead of this provision being on this page, it's going to go to this page, and therefore that boosts our earnings or something.
Exactly. So I'm saying that's a very short-term issue. You know, yes, I don't know whether it knocked them, you know, knocked all the banks, and whether it's a worry, and it might not be as big a worry as for them. But it still doesn't add to the top line. It still doesn't add to activity. And that's my concern. So if they're going to buy it on that basis, good luck. You know, Investec is now, it has caught up. But I don't know whether that's valid reason, you know, to ignore the other banks. So I it's still a mystery to me what the attraction is, because without, you know, I'm not a great, you know, the banks, I always measure banks from economic activity. You know, what's the economy doing? Are people going to borrow more? Are they going to, you know, are they going to need more finance? In other words, to borrow more either to spend or borrow more to either invest, is that going to happen? Are we going to see a lot more transactions through credit cards? You know, are we going to see a lot more M&A? I don't get that feeling here. You know, I don't get a feeling that things are going to pick up. So on that basis, yeah, there might be a bit of catch up. How far it goes, I don't know. You know, I'm still
cautious. I mean, Investec is one thing, more niched, a fine institution, of course. But there's a First Rand also up 3% today. So something, maybe it's the strong rand. Who knows? Because
Lindsay, it could be foreigners. It could be, you know, you suddenly get emerging markets. I watch TV the whole day. I watch the business channels, and I always hear people say, yeah, we like emerging markets. I'm saying, What do you like in emerging markets? What can you buy in an emerging market that you can't buy in Europe, that you can't get in Rotterdam, or you can't get in New York, or you can't get in London? What are you going to buy there? You know, what is the appeal?
Well, maybe it's, I mean, we can't talk about this now, but maybe it's a burgeoning FMCG market, fast-moving consumable goods, because of the young population, people going out there and buying stuff. So we don't need to talk about that now. On the downside today, Harmony down 3.5%, Supergroup down 2.5%, but there's nothing interesting there. David, please give me, Bitcoin, but you can give me the JSE indices, can't you?
So we closed down 0.51%.
Yes.
At 6.7393, with weakness right across the board. The only area that did anything was the banks that we've just been talking about now, where the bank index was up about 2.4%. But otherwise, weakness right across the board. Even property, which had a very good day yesterday, also came under a little bit of pressure. So the only area of interest where things went up across the board were banks.
Yeah.
So what the reason is, I don't know. We still haven't figured that out.
No, we haven't. But we will do, of course, ultimately. Or you will. David Shapiro is from Sasum Securities. That was the 5 o'clock shadow. And I'll speak to David next Monday. The views and opinions expressed in these podcasts are those of Lindsay Williams and various contributors and do not reflect the policy, position, or opinion of any other agency, organization, employer, or company associated with strictlybusinesspodcast.com. Assumptions made on the analyses are not reflective of the position of any other entity other than the speaker or the author. And since we are critically thinking human beings, these views are always subject to change, revision, and rethinking at any time. Please do not hold us to them in perpetuity.